In today's Mishnah, we're on the second and third Mishnah from the second Perek of Masechta Eidot. The Mishnah begins, Amar Rabbi Chanina Skana Kohanim. So this is the second of the testimonies of Rabbi Chanina Kohanim before the Chachamim, which we started learning about yesterday. He explains, Mi'amai lo ra'iti or, I never saw a hide that was removed from a korban, yotze l'beit ha'sreifa. They were sent to the place where korbanot that are pasul are sent to be burnt. So to explain, if a korban is found to pasul, the whole thing has to be sent to the beit ha'sreifa. His point is, if the hide was stripped of this korban prior to discovering that the korban is pasul, even if this issue with the korban was already present prior to that hide being stripped from this animal, his point is that if it's only discovered after the hide is removed, then the hide can be given to the kohanim, and the rest of the korban is still sent to the beit ha'sreifa. So Amar Rabbi Kiva says, Midvarab, from this testimony of Rabbi Kiva, we can learn another halacha, and that is that Lamanu shehamafshit et ha'bachor v'nitzat treifa. If someone strips a hide from a bechor prior to discovering this bechor as a treifa, and here we're dealing with a bechor balmum, she'ota kohanim be'oro, that the kohanim can still keep the hide. So just to explain again, in this situation, a bechor that has a mum, it is slaughtered, meaning has a blemish that means it cannot be used as a korban, it's given to the kohanim can slaughter this animal, they can eat it, and they can keep the hide themselves. If, however, the animal simply drops dead, then it is buried along with its hide. The point that Rabbi Kiva is making is that he's really deriving from this previous talacha, is that if the hide is stripped from this bechor, it's slaughtered and they discovered it's a treifa, then the kohanim can still keep it. It doesn't need to be buried along with the rest of the animal. However, Chachamim disagree. Chachamim say, Chachamim rim lo ra'inu eino raya. Chachamim argue, the fact that Rabbi Chanin never saw such a case doesn't mean that such a case is not possible to occur. It might just never have occurred in his time. Consequently, they maintain that if the hide is stripped from a korban, and then it's discovered that it is indeed a pasul, then Eliyotze l'beit ha'sreifa would be sent along with the animal to be burnt by the beit ha'sreifa. Let's now look at Mishnah Gimel. This is the third testimony of Rabbi Chanina b'Skana Kohanim. Afhu heid al kfar katan. He testified about a small village. Shia betzad Yerushalayim, that was by Yerushalayim. Ve'abo zaken echad. There's one elderly man there. V'hayam malve l'chol b'nei kfar v'kotev b'chtav yado. He used to give out loans to all the people of his village. But what was interesting in this case is he would write up the loan document himself. V'acharim chotmim, and then he would get other witnesses to sign on these documents. Uba ma'asa lefi l'chachamim v'itiru. The practice was brought before the chachamim. Chachamim permitted this practice. Now, one might think, that, in other words, what would be the issue with this practice? The practice is that if the lender wrote the document, he's the one that needs a document to claim the money. So one might think it's a bit suspicious. The person who's going to be using this document is also to claim money is also writing it himself. But the reason why it's permitted is because the document itself is not what gives the lender the power to claim the loan. It's the fact that there are witnesses, kosher witnesses, on the document. That's what gives the power. That's why there's no issue with the lender writing the document himself. Lafi darkecha ata lamed. Again, we can learn by derivation from this law that shahaisha kotevet kita, that a woman can write her own get. Despite the fact, once a woman has a get in hand, she's free to marry whoever she likes, and it's a husband has to give her the get. But once again, that, as the Mishnah is going to explain in a moment, that the kiyum get, what gives the get the force, is the signatures of the witnesses. And similarly, va'ish kotevet shuvro, and the husband can write the receipt. This is referring to the receipt the husband receives, having paid his wife the sum of money that's promised to her in the ketubah when he divorces her. Once again, you might think, once he's writing his own receipt, well, again, it's not a such problem because, again, the power of these documents is in the signatures, not in the content alone. Let's now learn the fourth and final testimony that the Mishnah is discussing here. And that's alam machat. This is referring to a needle, shinimtzah bebasar, that's found in a korban. Now, this needle, it's known that it became tameh by way of tumah tamet, and it would make this korban tameh. The question here is does this needle also, we don't know if the knife that we use for the shechita came into contact with the needle that was in the animal. Since there's a safek, we say shahasakin v'hayadayim tohorot. So his testimony is that both the knife and the hands, we say they're tahor. Why? Because this animal was slaughtered, it's a korban, it was in the azara. Now the azara has the status of reshut harab in the public domain. And a safek tuma, a doubt regarding tuma in the public domain, we rule leniently that it is tahor. That's why the sakin and the yadayim are tahorot. What about the basar? Well, the basar, I mean the flesh of this animal, was clearly in contact with the needle, so therefore the basar is tameh. So we need to clarify a few points. One is that when it comes to food, food has to come into contact with one of the seven liquids before it can become susceptible to tumah. So how then does animal, once it's slaughtered and becomes defined as food, how does that then become susceptible to tumah? So two explanations. One is that the animal on the way to the base of Mikdash went through a river, so it was still wet at the time it was slaughtered, and therefore when it transitioned from being animal to meat, it was in contact with one of the seven liquids and therefore is became susceptible to tumah. Another understanding is based on the concept of shechibat hakodesh machshira et ha-basa lekabel tumah, which basically means that the fact that this is a korban, it means that it being a korban automatically makes susceptible to tumah even though it didn't come into contact with one of the seven liquids. The next question we want to address here on this Mishnah is that if the basar, the flesh, is tameh, that's certainly tameh. Why didn't it not make the knife tameh or the person's hands tameh? So when it comes to the knife, that's kind of answered very simply. That is, food does not make kelim tameh, meaning food that it became tameh from, say, something else. And what about one's hands? Normally, if someone handles food that is tameh, his hands become sheni l'tumah, the second degree level of tumah. So the explanation here is that since this concept that the hands can become sheni l'tumah is rabbinic, when this takana, when this decree was implemented, they excluded the Beis HaMikdash from the scope of the gzeira. The final statement of the Mishnah is, v'im nitzah b'peresh, if, however, the need was found in the peresh, meaning in the feces of the animal, after slaughter, then we say hakol tahor. So in this case, even the basar is tahor. So firstly, since the needle didn't come into contact with the basa, the flesh itself, or klis motameh, and the feces itself is considered srucha, so it's no longer considered, according to the way Kat explains, like a mashke, it's no longer considered like a liquid, such that it could then make the feces themselves, having been in contact with something tameh, could make the basa itself tameh. That is why, if it's found in the feces, then the entire korban, everything would be tahor. Those are Mishnah today.